Hello everyone and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Stuart Campbell, Editor-in-Chief of Boat International, and here with me this week is Charlotte Hogarth-Jones, our Features Director. So let's get the bad news out of the way. We did have a brilliant interview lined up for this week, but unfortunately it fell through at the last minute. I'm sorry to say we don't have an interview for you this week, but we will have an excellent one for you next week. Normal service will resume, I promise. So stay tuned. So I thought we'd start this week with a quick, again, we seem slightly obsessed with the brokerage market at the minute, but why wouldn't we be? I mean, it's just incredible. So our data guru, Raphael, flagged this with me the other day, and he's spotted that a number of boats have appeared on the brokerage market asking more than what they were bought for by their first owners. We've picked out two, and I think it just demonstrates the strength of the market and how it is a real seller's market at the moment. The first is the 55-meter Amel's Yacht Lily, one of the limited editions 180 limited edition series, and it was delivered in 2017. So she's on the market for €43.3 million, and our data tells us that is more than what her original owner paid for her. She's a beautiful boat, but she's been on the charter market, so you'd think that any incoming owner will want to spend a bit of money on her, sprucing her up, which ultimately makes the price even more amazing, because you buy her for 43, you spend another couple of million, which would take the price, the full investment, quite a decent number above what the first owner paid for it. And then there's the Heesen Laurentia, which is another Dutch-built 55-meter delivered in 2017. She's on the market asking €49.9 million, which again, we estimate to be a fair way above what her first owner paid for the boat. So, I mean, obviously, there's always a bit of discounting done in the brokerage market. We don't think there's a lot of that happening at the moment, certainly not to the same levels we've seen previously. We estimate around 10%. So it's entirely possible that the owners of these boats, now 5 years old, when they're eventually sold, will make a profit, at least in nominal terms, which is pretty amazing.
That is incredible. When you think of how many owners don't make a profit, there must be some really jealous people out there. But I wonder if Lily is one of those boats that comes up a lot as a kind of popular charter boat. I wonder if that has anything to do with that, that whoever's buying them knows there's already a kind of ready charter market. From what I know about her, she's, you know, booked all the time, and there's a kind of captive audience there looking to revisit her. I wonder if that has anything to do with it.
It certainly can't hurt.
Yeah.
Having a really strong roster of clients, a charter fit crew, a good program. So yeah, absolutely. That will no doubt help the sales conversation. Absolutely. But I mean, it kind of harks back. I remember conversations in the previous boom phase of the superyacht industry, where slots were being swapped, you know, for boats that hadn't hit the water. You know, people were buying inbuilt projects for vastly more than what they were commissioned for and things like that. Obviously, we all know how that ended up the last time that happened. And hopefully this explosion in activity is a bit more sustainable this time, and there won't be such a hard landing. At least that is the hope. But, you know, asking prices are being defended. Boats are selling really well. Actually, talking about brokerage transactions. So last week we mentioned that 2021's full year number was 714. We put it out last year, and we mentioned that number might tickle up a little bit as deals that were closed in the calendar year 2021, news of them comes through in early 2022. Well, that has happened, and the number is now 722. So we put the full number of brokerage deals done in 2021 at 722. So Charlotte, you weren't on last week's pod, but Sapphire and I bet another bottle of champagne on what this year's eventual brokerage number will be. Sophia was punchier than me. She said 650. I said 525.
Well, first, I'm just going to say I'm not buying anyone any champagne as part of this. You can count me out of the buying Little Fizz as part of this, because I'll just turn up and drink it next Christmas as I did this year. I would probably go less punchy than Sophia. I reckon people that wanted to get into the industry, like new buyers, have now had time to do that. And anyone that wanted to, like most people, will have kind of gone for it. So I think it's definitely going to go down, but maybe not as much as you think. I was going to say 600. I think I'm going to go lower than that. I think I'm going to go, oh, I don't know. I don't know, though, because 722 this year, that's a big drop. I'm going to be very boring and say, and it suffices 650.
650.
I think that would be quite a big drop. I think 610.
Okay.
We'll see. We'll see. We'll have to look back at this in 12 months' time. But
so yeah. 650, 610 and 525.
I think it's so much to do with what's happening with... I think lots of people see yachts as a way of travelling when they can't travel at the moment otherwise. So I think what happens in the rest of the world to do with flights opening up and testing and people being able to travel by those traditional means is going to have a big knock-on effect. And I think things won't open up that much, but there'll be a lot of talk about it, which will start to make people doubt if they want to wholeheartedly jump into yachting.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, the way the year has started, it's looking like you'll be more right than I will. I saw Istros, the beautiful, recently rebuilt 42-metre classic Fedship that she sold after a mere 53 days on the market. So, you know, just because the year's ticked over doesn't mean that the... appetite for super yachts has lessened. It's the year started very, very well indeed.
Also, I think a few people are kind of getting burnt as part of this process. I've heard a few kind of mumblings of people kind of buying things which turn out to be pretty terrible deals or going for things that were a bit ambitious for them, maybe as first-time owners. So I think that will start to trickle through. People who kind of took the plunge and maybe it didn't go how they expected. So I think that will maybe put some people off. But we'll see.
We shall see. Meanwhile, how's this for a story? So I'm, after 2 years of this exhausting, endless pandemic, I am done with Microsoft Teams.
As someone who works with Stuart, I'd like to say actually after about 2 days, you were done with Microsoft Teams. Let's not make out like 2 years down the road, you're fed up with Microsoft Teams. I think from week one, you weren't an avid user slash fan.
It's so true. I really can't stand it. So virtual meetings... I really struggle with. So I'm personally spending as much time as possible in the office. But I did sit up upon reading the news that the skeleton of an unfinished yacht is for sale on, where else, Microsoft Teams. So she's going to be up for auction and it's all going to be done via Microsoft Teams on March the 1st. So this is the partially built 45-metre Bella T, which is lying in South Africa. She's just a shell at the moment, but the auction does include... 4 shipping containers with her interior fittings and original Cat engines. Although after a few decades in shipping crates, I'm not quite sure what the state
is. That's exciting, though, that whoever buys it is just going to open these boxes. It's a bit like some kind of reality TV show. What's inside?
Have you ever seen that show, Storage Wars?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You've got to be praying that it's been kept in good condition rather than full of all sorts of things.
Maybe we could do Super Yacht Storage Wars.
Super Yacht Storage Wars, that would be great. Loads of people say that they get kind of things almost chucked in when they buy their super yacht.
So those 2003 interiors are still there waiting to be discovered. So the boat was started in 1977 by a Spanish shipyard, but it was never finished. It wound up in South Africa at the Far Ocean Yard, but a legal dispute meant the boat was abandoned in 2003. And that has been the case ever since. But finally, this saga might be reaching a conclusion with this auction over Teams. But our reporter, Tom McGee, was given an amazing quote by one person involved who said, "You need plutonium balls to take this boat on." So if you're blessed, with a pair of those, then this might be the boat for you. And you know, with the market the way it is, you might end up making a profit out of it. There you go. So buy the boat.
Whoever this...
finish it and sell it on.
Yeah, plutonium ball donor is. I'd like to meet them because it is a bit of a kind of shot in the dark. But how cool if that then turns out to be an amazing buy. You know, it's like buying anything at auction. But I always love hearing stories of how people have got their super yachts. Almost every owner has a kind of interesting story in terms of how they got it. But the auctions in particular, it reminded me of... I met a Greek owner called Ilia Rigas the other day, who owns this big sort of newly refitted 51 meter, I think it is, Perini called Almira. And she said when they heard about the boat, it was stuck in a legal dispute. You know, Perini had kind of warned her off it and said, oh, you know, you'll be waiting forever for this. Forget about it. So she'd kind of written it off. And then after a couple of years, it did go to an online auction. Not, I don't think on Teams. I think Teams is a weird medium to be doing
this. It is
on,
weird.
Like, you know, do you do the clapping hands when it finally gets sold or whatever? Anyway, she did this online auction and was bidding against a Russian guy who had had this kind of strategy of trying to bid at the absolute last minute. And something went wrong and he wasn't able to. So after the auction ended, you know, Ilya gets her boat and he kind of, her response really cracked me up because apparently he got in touch and he said, hey guys, you know, something's gone wrong. Like, I actually really want this boat. And she just said, well, hey, I actually really want this boat too and I just want it. So jog on. Yeah, exactly. Which I thought was quite a good, I think I would probably be more British about it and sort of say, oh, okay, should we have a rematch then? But no, she just said, yeah, I want it. You know, I don't know what you were thinking there. I'm sure she said that's probably doing a disservice to her, but you know, these online auctions, I think you do get kind of crazy Wi-Fi issues and things. And it was also I read about an auction of super yacht memorabilia once, and someone was bidding on some, maybe you can remember, some really famous poker chips that used to belong to some Hollywood star or something that were bought on his yacht. And that online bidder dropped out because his Wi-Fi cut out. And yeah, I think the general rule is once the auction's over, you've not got a hope in hell of getting that item back if you weren't on the line at the time.
Remember, we've talked a bit in the podcast before about the massive 120-meter superyacht conversion project known as Project Y910. So it went up for auction late last year, and it was only supposed to last a brief period of time, and it got underway on December the 10th, but it was announced over the Christmas period that the auction has been extended to the 31st of March. So there you go. And that's, you know, that's a 6,000 or something gross ton boat up for auction on concierge auctions. So, you know, it really runs the gamut, doesn't it? So Almira is a lovely auction story.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they got what they wanted and they're going to do some great things in that boat.
Yeah.
If you're sporting a pair of plutonium balls, there's Bella T, which is available in South Africa, up for auction on March the 1st. And if you're after a massive ice-classed monster, there is 120-meter Project Y910 up for auction right now. So talking about brave owners, and I just wanted to talk about a guy who's appeared on the podcast previously. It's Andy Scott. So he owns the 31-meter sailing yacht Elton, but we did a feature with him as well that went in the magazine, and it's only just appeared on the website. He's a fascinating guy, but I had to laugh at a number of details in the story because I was rereading it the other day. And this cracked me up. So his first ever boat was a 9-meter racing yacht. And it was called Olympic Flame because it never went out. And Andy Scott did a horrendous refit on it and lived on her during his stint at university, having sensibly calculated that the marina fees were cheaper than the university accommodation. And he said, I put wallpaper inside, it had beautiful lines, and I strapped an outboard engine to the back. It only had 3 feet of headroom. And when you invited people back, they'd ask, where do I sit? I'd reply, you can only lay, he recalls. So that's quite an interesting tactic for bringing.
Yeah, well, that was my thought. I met him. He's definitely a savvy guy. Actually, a really lovely guy. He was really interesting to talk to. But yeah, I thought if I was a young uni student, I would definitely make that joke sort of, yeah, as a tactic more than anything else. But he did genuinely live on it. That's, yeah, that's what he did.
And how about this? So during the 2008 financial crisis, he lost his, he was heavily invested in hotels, I think, and he lost his fortune and his 38-meter schooner. So to try and save money, he decided to take the yacht to Tunisia. He said, it was horrible. I couldn't afford a skipper, so I took it to Africa myself. I was about to run out of fuel and I didn't have any charts, but I wanted to get the boat to safety, so I chose a place called Hammamet. But I ended up in the wrong town. Everyone came out to watch me and 7 fishing boats ended up towing me off to Hammamet. It was very embarrassing. It was so that was the end of the quote. And then he goes on to say, in Tunisia, I also got run over by a taxi and broke both my legs in the same year.
Yeah, he really went through it in that he, like you say, he kind of got into yachting, and then was sort of down on his luck and had to sell his boat, well, this boat that you're talking about here, and then came back up. And now he works on kind of, you know, businesses that aren't doing very well, kind of buying them up, working out how they can improve and that sort of thing. Yeah, he also got put in prison at one stage. I can't remember where. It was something to do with the yacht and something to do with fees, and it's in the piece. But he called his bank manager on Christmas Day and said, you know, can you transfer me these funds so I can get out? But because it was Christmas Day, his bank manager just didn't believe him. He thought it was a wind-up. So he just hung up the phone and he was stuck there for a lot longer trying to, I think that was his one call to try and get the money. So it took him a while to get out of that one as well. But yeah, really interesting guy and interesting boats too.
Yeah, really interesting boats. They have good backstories. So yeah, real kind of rags to riches to rags, back to riches story. So I think he learned a lot during the pandemic, and he's built a really successful business now. And he owns a couple of really lovely boats, which charter well, I understand. But yeah, just some of the quotes in the piece are just absolutely fantastic. You know, you dream about owners like that being as candid as...
Yeah, it's nice when people are upfront like that and they sort of say, yeah, I tried to captain my own boat. It was awful. Yeah. it's quite nice when people fess up to it.
Absolutely. So moving on to... So we're working on... What issue are we working on now? The April issue.
Yeah, we're working on April at the moment.
So a big feature is tenders. So we talk a lot about tenders in the issue. Electric ones, which we'll talk about in another podcast, but also some of the cool new ones, traditional tenders, traditionally powered tenders that are coming out. And you've been looking into that, Charlotte.
Yeah. So the electric one is kind of a separate piece where we've reviewed certain models, and that's definitely worth looking at if you're thinking about going electric. But the tenders piece surprised me a bit because I've never been particularly excited by tenders, and I've read a lot about them, obviously, in this issue coming up and in the research for it. And actually, in another piece that's going to be in the same issue, there was an interesting piece with Mr. Pierluigi Loropiana, who was the gentleman who famously owned that boat, My Song, big sailing yacht that sort of tragically slipped off its carrier cradle into the sea a few years back. But anyway, he's got a brand new motor yacht called Mascanada, which you can read all about in the piece, and I'm sure we'll talk about it on a future podcast. But what struck me in that was he was talking with huge enthusiasm about his tender called Iguana Jones, which I think is an amazing name. But that's a sort of 10-metre amphibious rib tender. The actual model is the Iguana X100, and it has sort of tank-like tracks, so it doesn't need a cradle. They keep her still, and she's sort of perfect for rugged, adventurous exploring. And he was saying what a great thing that had been for them while they've been using this new boat, going out and about with the family. The irony is that because the family wanted to have the main deck free for themselves, the tender actually followed the main yacht around, and he was kind of joking that his tender uses more fuel than his actual boat, following them around everywhere. But it's quite cleverly customised so that the furniture and the colours, all these kind of grey shades, match the mothership perfectly, so they look very cool together.
It's a cool concept, the Iguana. So the tank tracks kind of fold up into the hull and then deploy down when you want to kind of roll up a beach. I remember years ago when the first sea legs came out, and I remember thinking it was a bit of a fad to me, this rib with wheels that could just climb up beaches. But sea legs, again, I was very wrong. So again, take any predictions I make with a massive pinch of salt, because the sea legs, they've sold loads of those. They've been enormously successful. It's turned into a really, really great concept. And this kind of takes it one step further. So the sea legs deployed three wheels. The Iguana goes for the tank tracks. It's a very James Bond, isn't it?
I mean, yeah.
You just kind of deploy your tracks and then kind of cruise up the beach to the stunned amazement of
everyone on the beach.
Yeah.
Well, some kind of more sort of conventional, I guess, in terms of the design, but very cool ones that we talk about in the piece. I thought I'd spotlight a couple of them. One is the Nerea NY24, which I think looks awesome. It looks really cool. Comes in three variants. I can't say the word variants now without thinking of COVID and getting all kind of angsty, but variants as the word. Comes in GT, Deluxe and Limo. Apparently the Limo is the best version for super yachts, but it's got a top speed of 32 knots. And the Deluxe version features stylish pilot chairs by Ideal Italia. And there's even room for a kind of convertible sofa berth, and there's heads below. Plus you can have a version with Ultra Materia, which I hadn't heard of before, but it's kind of eco-friendly, recyclable finishing material. So obviously we like that. And then we're kind of featuring the Solaris tender by Yachtworth Mayer, which looks, I love it because it just looks like something that might fall out of a Lego set, not in small part because it's kind of bright yellow in the interior. But that was the catamaran tender to the 139.7 meter Solaris when it launched last year. And engineers employed the same rounded Mark Newson styling as the mothership, with a frameless curved windscreen, lots of hidden storage, a drop down beach landing platform, and a hydraulic hardtop, which is fixed in just two places. So that can go up to 37 knots and take 20 passengers. So it's more spacious than it looks because it looks very neat and very sort of dinky. And then there was another one with an awesome name again, Miss Wonderly, which is by Falcon. And I thought she was quite an interesting to look at because Falcon is actually a sort of small startup based in Southampton. And it's a great kind of calling card project for them. So that's definitely one to take a look at as a kind of cool new example. And then last but not least, if you're looking for a sort of all-rounder, the Compass 9.9 meter landing craft is a good kind of safe bet. So with the removable seating taken out, the 12 square meter loading bay packs on water toys and dive kit, and it's got sort of removable racks for cylinders. And with the seating in, the space can accommodate 8 guests, bringing the total seated passengers to 12. But whatever the configuration, there's a shaded dining area plus a shower, a head and a galley. And the model is really customizable, which I think is very cool. So you can have Yanmar, Volvo or Cummins engines and Hamilton or Rolls-Royce water jets for a possible speed of up to top speed of up to 40 knots. And the first hull even had kind of jet ski refueling capabilities. So that's cool and one you can kind of play around with if you've got a specific idea of what you want in mind.
The idea, I love the idea of a landing craft tender. I saw the first really amazing one I saw. It was on the first Ulysses boat. And I remember I saw her in Capdon Team, and I went down to the tender garage and just saw the array of toys and the tender and just the possibilities of just landing all this cool gear straight on the beach was amazing. And then there was another incredible one. Was on Luminosity, the big Bonetti. So the original owner of that boat wanted to put, if I remember it rightly, a Rolls Royce right up on the sun deck, and the idea was to crane the Rolls Royce off the top of the deck down the side of the boat straight onto a landing craft which would cruise into the beach. I think it's just a cool idea, isn't it? Cruise up, got your ATVs.
That's quite James Bond.
Dirt bikes. Yeah, the thing, the hatch, you know, hits the beach and you burn off. I think that'd be great. I love that idea. And Compass build a bloody good boat, Compass. Look forward to seeing that one. So all those tenders and more will be in the March Tech Toys and Tenders issue, which is going to press in the next week or so, I believe. And that'll be out in early Feb. So do keep an eye out for that. Alrighty, let's whip through some news stories, and we start with some bad news. So I'll let you to kick us off, Charlotte.
Yep, some pretty bad news to start us off with. Unfortunately, there's been a fire at Ferretti's Catalica shipyard. There are some pretty nasty images and a video, actually, of a fire on board an inbuild boat at the shipyard. We understand it is a Ferretti 920. According to the local fire service, the fire started at around 9:30 a.m. on January 11th in one of the sheds at Ferretti Yachts. Ferretti has confirmed that there were no injuries to personnel. However, an in-build Ferretti motor yacht has been damaged. The Ferretti Group itself released a statement on the incident, which read, "The fire that broke out in the early hours of the morning yesterday, Tuesday, January the 11th, involving a boat under construction at the Catalica shipyard, caused no injuries thanks to the immediate implementation of safety procedures, with the intervention of the shipyard's firefighting teams and the local fire brigade. The fire has been contained and extinguished. The site is safe. The causes of the incident are currently under investigation. So yes, you can see more about that on our site at the moment. And of course, we'll keep you posted as things unfold.
Next up, we have a couple of boat business stories. And the first is that the Dutch refit yard Balk has inked a strategic partnership with Chinese investment firm Zhongying International. In a statement, Balk said, "Zhongying's investment gives us significant leverage to take on bigger shipbuilding projects than ever before, with zero compromise on quality and innovation. This is game-changing, not only for Balk Shipyard and our wider nautical family, but also across the superyacht industry at large." So Zhongying's portfolio also includes Chinese boat builder Jinlong Mega Yacht, which built which martial art star's superyacht, Charlotte?
Finally, a question I know the answer to. Jackie Chan. Yes, Jackie Chan, who I'm always trying to get to talk to me and who never seems to want to. If you're listening, Jackie Chan, please respond to my emails.
Jackie on the podcast. Yeah. Love Jackie Chan. So it's an interesting move into the superyacht sector by a significant Chinese investor. Obviously, there's some other Chinese investment about the place. So the Weichai Group owns a majority stake in the Ferretti Group, and Sunseeker is owned by the Dalian Wanda Group. But it's been a while since there's been a significant move into the space by a Chinese investor. So I wonder if this is the start of a more institutional move into the superyacht market, given its success in 2021 and its growth prospects. We'll have to wait and see. Meanwhile, the German shipyard Lloyd Werft, which last year delivered 139-meter Solaris, has unfortunately filed for bankruptcy. Interestingly, the yard is owned by Malaysia's Genting Group, which bought Lloyd Werft in 2016. According to press reports, Genting Group suffered a $1.72 billion loss in 2020, and trading its shares was suspended on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange. So Genting has some interest in the cruising industry, which has obviously not had a great couple of years. So bad news there for Lloyd Werft and everyone involved, because there's some really quality workers and they do a great job. You know, the Solaris is an exceptional yacht, and they also did Luna. So fingers crossed, you know, someone can come in and take that company on.
Yeah, absolutely. I hope someone kind of swoops in and things can carry on there. Anyway, lastly, some catamaran news. You'll be delighted, Stu. Not doing it deliberately. There's just a lot of it around. Don't know what that means necessarily. But anyway, the first 100 Sunreef Power has been delivered and is named Shimali. Built in Poland, Shimali is 29.95 metres long and combines a dark grey hull with a rose gold superstructure. Very jazzy. Designed in-house, Shimali is powered by twin 1,300 HP engines for a transatlantic range. She's the biggest Sunreef cat for now. The yard also has a 49-metre Sunreef Power under construction, which we should be seeing soon. That's going to be huge, 49 metres. There's also a second 100 Sunreef Power under construction, so lots more action in Poland for Sunreef, and we look forward to seeing those. And for now, you can take a look at Shimali.
Yep. Pictures on the website now. That 49 meters is going to be massive. It just looks, the volume is going to be off the charts. So I can't wait to see that. We were hoping to see that the end of last year. So it can't be long before it will peek out of a shed and hit the water.
Yeah. I imagine the kind of space on that would be massive. Oh, the volume.
Just crazy. It'll be crazy. So let's whip through some data, as ever, brought to you by Boat Pro, the superyacht industry's leading market intelligence service. So we just thought we'd have a quick look at the expected deliveries this year of 100-metre plus boats. So we're expecting 700-metre plus boats to be handed over to their owners in 2022. The biggest is the Ocean Co. Project Y721, 127-metre long sailing boat, which we have talked at length about on the podcast in the past. That's the biggest and most exciting delivery of the year. Next on the list is a Fed ship, 118.8-metre motor yacht 1010, which features exterior design by Espinoino and interior design by Zeretti. She had a technical launch in late 2020. Which revealed a sleek superstructure and a classic raked bow. The sheer line of the boat includes an original eyebrow amidships, a feature that is repeated on the Sundeck. So a very nice looking thing. So she's going to be delivered fairly soon. Number three is the 118.2-metre Abeking and Rasmussen Project 6507. Exterior design for that boat comes from, exterior and interior design for that boat comes from Joseph Durand Architecture. So it's the biggest Abeking Rasmussen ever. So it's been kept under tight wraps. It's said to be designed for adventurous cruising with lots of room for tenders, toys, and a submarine. The yacht's designer, interestingly, is better known as an architect and furniture designer who makes much of his French touch. His biggest project to date has been a 26-meter OTAM. So there you go, from 20
bit of a jump,
118.2 meters and 5,000 gross tons. Congratulations to Joseph. Can't wait to see that, especially if she looks like she's going to be a bit more rugged.
I love it when you get these kind of external designers coming from very small projects to big leaps, because I think so often they just have a completely new perspective on things when they're coming at it fresh like that. So yeah, really excited to see that.
Yeah, totally agree. I think I think she's going to be a really interesting project. So fourth on the list is another Ocean Co, 117-meter motor yacht, Project Y719, again with Espen Oino exterior design and interior design by Sino. So she's expected to be delivered very soon. Classic three-deck superstructure. The main deck is half hidden in the bow, where it runs the full beam of the hull with a series of large windows. She has two 3,500 kilowatt electric motors for a top speed of 18 knots. She's also said to feature a glass-bottomed pool on the main deck, a gym, and a large beach club. Just a classic-looking boat, just a really sensibly designed boat there from Mr. Oino. Number five is the 109-meter Ocean Co. Y720, which features exterior and interior design by Sino. So it was originally expected to launch in 2021, but it's been rolled over into the new year. Speculation about a US movie mogul owner aside, hint, hint, no hard news about this project has been revealed, with both designers sworn to secrecy. But the bow on this is razor sharp. It's a great looking thing. There's lots of full height glazing in the superstructure. And we understand there's a very advanced propulsion system installed as well. The sixth 100 meter plus delivery expected this year is the 107 meter Lursen Northern Star 3. So this is originally known as Project Ice Cap. Northern Star 3 is believed to be the third boat to bear that name for Canadian owner John Risley. Not a lot of detail at the moment, but the renderings we've seen indicate she'll be a true explorer yacht with a reverse bow and a long raised aft deck for helicopter ops. She will accommodate up to 20 guests across 10 staterooms and will carry an impressive range of toys and tenders. I'm sure one of them will be a landing craft. It's got to be. Great looking boat, very tough. She'll do some very cool things. Last but not least is another Ocean Co. 105-meter motor yacht, Project Y1050. We know very little about this boat, and we don't even have a picture. So Ocean Co playing its cards very close to its chest on this one. We'll bring you pictures as soon as we have them, but we wonder if it's got something to do with the 105-meter explorer yacht concept Esquel unveiled in Dubai a few years ago. It'll be a very quick turnaround from the unveiling of that concept to delivery of this boat. But, you know, who knows? Ocean Co are a very capable shipyard. We'll have to wait and see.
Well, certainly looking at these stats, Ocean Co are killing it. Four out of those seven that you just mentioned, they're all with Ocean Co. And they're such big boats. I can't believe they're going to pull that off, four of that size in the same year. But I think they are becoming known for being the kind of go-to designers for these kind of slightly radical, massive super yachts. That seems to be the kind of USP that they're plugging away at, and obviously being very successful at doing so. So really excited to see all those boats, and good for them.
Yeah, quite right. Vintage year for Ocean Co, so congratulations to everyone over at the yard in Holland. So that's it for this week. That's all the news and data. And as mentioned at the top of the podcast, very, very sadly, we don't have an interview for you this week, but I promise normal service will resume next time. In the meantime, don't forget to like and subscribe. This episode was mixed and produced by Grace Nielsen and is a production of Boat International Media.